Yes, good morning, everybody. So glad you're here today. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable on March 24th, 2019. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And we welcome you all. And we will start this morning with our morning prayer.
Hi, Mrs. Eddy. On page 220 of Miscellany. Each day I pray for the pacification of all national difficulties, for the brotherhood of man, for the end of idolatry and infidelity, and for the growth and establishment of Christian religion, Christ's Christianity. I also have faith that my prayer availeth, and that he who is overturning will overturn until he whose right it is shall reign. Each day I pray, God bless my enemies, make them thy friends, give them to know the joy and the peace of love.
Thank you. Mary Baker Eddy, Miscellaneous Writings. We today in this classroom are enough to convert the world if we are of one mind, for then the whole world will feel the influence of this mind as when the earth was without form, and mind spake, and form appeared. Okay, this morning we will start again with our watching point.
Watch number 395. Watch lest you accept the suggestion that God has withdrawn himself and left you to work out your own salvation. As the mother hen deserted her young, when they, in the darkness of the eggs, believe that she is close at hand, tenderly watching over each egg, protecting it, and keeping it warm. The mother hen never helps her children to hatch. When a farmer attempts to help one to do so, it never survives. This seems to point to a law concerning mortals, that they must peck open their shells with Christian Science as part of the development needed by spiritual sense. We are told that it requires 10,000 pecks or more for a chicken to break through its shell and hatch. Every effort we make to break through the shell of materiality should be recognized as necessary and efficacious. At the same time, we should feel God's precious presence watching over our feeble efforts, which persistence will surely crown with success.
Thank you. Any comments on that? Any experiences you've had?
I just think it's important to keep that in mind, that you're not alone, and that however difficult whatever you're learning, you have to keep in mind that you're not, God has not, like it says, God has not withdrawn himself. And I think it's reassuring. And also, as far as where it says the farmer attempts to help a chicken hatch, I guess it's mentioning not meddling in God's work, God's will, with human will, to not have to let God's development happen in its own way without trying to meddle in it.
Thank you. Over the years, I've gotten myself in some messes, and it seemed like there was no way out, but I always remember God always prepared me and always would, and that gave me the fight to get myself right. Thank you.
There's a clue in this, isn't there, as to how to raise our children, or grandchildren, as the case may be, that they have to demonstrate themselves, their own relationship with God, their own spiritual growth. It can't be done for them. As much as we like to help our children or our friends or whatever, there's only so much we can do for them before we actually interfere with their own. And that requires, you know, prayer and wisdom to know where the line is drawn. God guides us because we're all his children.
Thank you. Does anyone know that story? Prince?
Oh, yeah.
On a beach.
Yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
Well, I can paraphrase it. Walking along the beach, man walking along the beach.
There are two sets of footprints.
And then he comes to a point where there's only one set of footprints for a long while. And then a little further along, there are another two sets of footprints. And he asks God, well,
why did you leave?
I was going through my most difficult time.
Where were you? You know, where were you? You left me alone during my most difficult time. And what did God say, or the Christ, whatever you want?
That's when I carried you.
That's when I carried.
Beautiful.
Yes. So, don't ever forget when you're walking through a storm, hold your head up high, as that song goes, and don't be afraid of the dark. At the end of the storm, there's a golden sky. Sweet sound of a lark. Walk on, walk on, through the wind and the rain. Goes on, but anyway.
With hope in your heart.
Thank you. Hope in your heart. So, the most difficult times, you just put your head down in humility and say, Father, I am helpless without you. I can't do anything without you, because that's how it feels and that's the truth. You can trust. He comes, cares, he's there. That's when he's carrying you. And that other beautiful, our hymn, Trust the Eternal, when the shadows darken. And joys of daylight seem like such a dream, something like that. But anyway, trust in God. You will find when you do that, you will look back on it and realize you've made your greatest growth.
I love that other hymn too that says, standeth God within the shadows, keeping watch above his own.
Yes, that's beautiful. Yeah, it's wonderful. All these hymns come to us in times of need. Why we learn them, memorize the words. They're beautiful. And you can always sing them wherever you are, even if you sing it mentally.
But they sound great in the shower.
Yeah, they sound really good there. That's what Benjamin likes to do. He would always sing in the shower, sometimes Ebo songs, as well as him. So he told us. I didn't know. I never knew for real.
That's what he says anyway.
Yeah. I think for a while he lived at Mrs. Evans' house, where he was there a lot, and actually she might have told me, because she would hear him singing. So anyway. Okay.
Pardon
me?
I was going to say this pecking of a shell is a special meaning for me, because my daughter had this chicken that hatched out, a little chick, in early May, and the weather turned terrible in the 30s, raining, and that was going to be the end of the chick in my mind. But thankfully God's mind and the chicken's mind had different things to take care of it, because it also gives me that special meaning to Psalm 91, covers thee with his feathers, under his wings shalt thou trust, because the chicken took the little chick out into the rain. I'm watching this going by, this is crazy. And the little chick would run around, and all of a sudden it would run over to its mother, she would sit down on it. After a while, it would come running out again and run around and run back to its mother. But the chick did really fine, and turned out that she listened to God better than I did.
Now, these wonderful examples of nature, very encouraging. That's why we love nature so. It's an example of God's care. And the story of the eagle that flies way above and he'll have his eaglet, his wings are carrying him up way high to teach him to fly, and then he would let the eaglet fall. And sometimes the eaglet could catch on and start to glide, but when they're learning, sometimes they would tumble. And the mother eagle would always swoop down right in, right before it reached the earth without fail. Always there, always watching, for the eagle eyes. Okay, our subject today is matter. And as Jim likes to say, matter doesn't matter. Oh, dear. So, our golden text, Jeremiah. Have the nation changed their gods, which are yet no gods? So, I would like to speak to Linda's forum, which was beautiful, but those verses in Isaiah in the responsive reading, and the work of righteousness shall be peace, and the effect of righteousness, quietness, and assurance forever. And my people shall dwell in a peaceable habitation and in sure dwellings and in quiet resting places. So, Linda.
Or just to read it?
Yeah, you can.
Really, what I was given to carry this in my pocket this week, this statement about the work of righteousness shall be peace. And also, then after Wednesday's testimony meeting, it just really congealed for me that this righteousness is really handling animal magnetism. At least that's how it felt to me. And so I looked up righteousness in Webster's, and it says, purity of heart and rectitude of life, conformity of heart and life to the divine law. It includes all we call justice, honesty, and virtue with holy affection.
A wonderful definition. I love it, that definition. I have that written in my Bible, too. Go ahead.
And so I realized that in thinking about why animal magnetism sometimes seems so hard to handle, it's because I think some of the false teaching that has come before an organization, and I realized that it was either animal magnetism was no big deal, don't worry about it, or paranoid, it was out to get you and you had to look over your shoulder every second. And so it was, it left me and others undefended. It was peace, for no, there was no peace, and you didn't know how to handle evil influence. And I speak directly from my experience. It's not just, you know, conjuring this up. I had a Christian Science teacher that did both these things, where either it was, don't worry, malicious animal magnetism is rare, it's nothing. And then not really given this sense that we get here of this everyday training, this daily watching your thinking. And actually, I realized it almost strengthened the human mind, this other teaching, rather than conquering the human mind, which we're taught here. To me, it almost was the opposite. It was worse than not knowing how to handle it. It almost entrenched the human mind. Because the reason I say that is because we were taught that living Christian Science was the biggest part of Christian Science. But the funny part is, the interesting part is that most of the stuff we're taught here wasn't taught. And so living Christian Science to me then was being nice, being diplomatic, going to church, you know, and letting wrong rule the right, you know, right. And so to me then that enthroned the human mind. And so when we were given that power to sever conquers, That is really helpful too, because it says that you aren't passive, which the definition was not acting, unresisting, not opposing, receiving without resistance, and then cowardice definition was want of courage, timidity, and fear. And so those definitely aren't expressing righteousness. So thank you for the continued teaching and for the Wednesday service.
Thank you. And that was on Wednesday night when that topic of animal magnetism comes up. And you have to remember, I couldn't speak all of it on Wednesday because I had to be my 4 minutes. Anyway, when it comes to you, it comes first as a suggestion, as this voice talking. And what it tries to do is paralyze you into inaction. Gets you so fearful. Oh, my health, what's going to happen? I won't be able to go to work, or I was just terrible. Or, oh, my finances, I'm going to run out of money. Oh, my gosh, I'm so scared to death. There are no jobs. There's nothing around that I can do. Or, oh, my marriage is, oh, what will I do without so-and-so? Anyway, it just pounds you with these very real suggestions. And if you sit and listen, you get almost like you get into a state of inaction. And that's what it wants. And Florence, who loves ways that are vain, a wonderful article. I love it too, and we were taught here to work with it often. It says the same thing. These insidious suggestions that come. So, here we go with that cowardice never conquers. You don't sit and listen to it. You're not passive. You don't let the wrong rule the right. You struggle and thus conquer. And that was Gary's testimony. You fight it. No, I'm not listening to you. And the sooner the better before you get into a cocoon state where you can't move. And then we should not avoid the things that hurt us, but repeat them and meet them as their superior. Whatever it's telling you, get out your Science and Health or your Bible and start bulleting with the truths you know. Don't let it do this to you.
Why it's so important to have these classes. Because before, I don't know about other people, but you start to believe it or you don't, you become not passive necessarily. But from this teaching, you know how to fight.
Good. Well, right. And that was perhaps the thing I loved most about Mrs. Evans, and that was so different about any other practitioner. She taught us this. She was a fighter. She didn't sit and be passive and let the wrong rule the right. No, she did not. And then, disease is a coward that leaves you and you're not afraid of it. Don't fear it. Don't let it start with its litany of lies.
Don't respect it.
Don't respect it. Don't look it up on the internet to find out what it's going to do. Examine it, look at it. That was a wonderful testimony of Florence's about that, wanting to look at it, check it. You focus on God, not on the problem.
Jeffrey? I've heard that this expression, analysis is paralysis.
Thank you. That's great.
I like that one.
That's very true, because you just start, you think and think, and pretty soon you don't know what the heck to do. You're loaded down with human opinion and theory.
It gives you some history why it's true.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, it's inherited, or you did something, or I don't know, there's always that reason, and there's no end to it. Argument.
And it's all the result of examining matter, of examining so-called material sense. What is the so-called evidence that matter presents to us? We start examining that, we end up nowhere, or worse than nowhere.
This is Eddie also. Foretold what
Linda was talking about from miscellaneous writings, things to be thought of, on page 264. If a teacher of Christian Science unwittingly or intentionally offers his own thought and gives me his authority for it, if he diverges from science and knows it not, or knowing it, makes a venture from vanity in order to be thought original or wiser than somebody else, this divergence widens. He grows dark and cannot regain at will an upright understanding. This error in the teacher also predisposes his students to make mistakes and lose their way. And she finishes by saying, diverse opinions in science are stultifying. All must have one principle and the same rule. All who follow the principle and the rule have but one opinion of it, which is so beautifully taught here at Plainfield. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you. So true. We have to remain very faithful to these teachings. That's the danger of New Age and other things, because they start to divert, and they'll lead you on different paths. Time you could be spent understanding this science better. So then we had that beautiful forum from Parthen. Before we go on, I just wanted to say one thing about what Linda said. Mrs. Eddy has said, thinking Collectania, but anyway, that Christian Scientists make either too much or too little of animal magnetism, and just what she was talking about. You're either shrugging it off as nothing, or you're absolutely terrified, and you see a boogeyman around in every corner. Neither way is Christian Science. It's not handling it. We just talked about how to handle it. Use that. I mean, I carried that, do we not all understand cowardice never conquers? I carried that in my purse for years. I was too timid to teach Sunday school. I didn't want to do anything. I was such a scaredy cat. That's what got me through it. Don't be passive and don't let this boss you around. There's no end to its bossiness. So then we have Parthen, who, from first edition, on a law that is not God's, we have a moral right to pass judgment and to commute its sentence. Every instance of matter or the body governing man is justly condemned and morally impossible, insomuch as it manifests a want of wisdom that renders it null and void. And then he goes on about the fake judge, talks about the allegory and the trial in Science and Health, which is beautiful. And how if you let mortal mind, all the beliefs of matter, be your judge, whoops.
And you put yourself in the wrong court.
Put yourself in the court of error. So, he says, Parthen, am I agreeing quickly with my adversary? If I am careless in my thought, error can don the robe of an authoritarian judge, and before I know it, appear to enthrone itself in the highest place in my consciousness. Monopolizing that position meant only for Christ's truth alone. Am I allowing error and error's aggressive false witness friends, one after another, to infest my thought life with imaginings that silence and contradict the promises of God? Divine assurances that should be occupying my consciousness every moment? What images am I allowing to be displayed and entered as evidence against my well-being in the court of error? Images that should be blotted out. Are my thoughts centered on God continuously, or am I sometimes obliviously playing back the same loop of mediocre, low expectations concerning myself and the world around me? What thoughts am I allowing to hold court in the temple of my consciousness, which should be inhabited by spirit's thoughts alone? So, ask yourself that question. Who are you listening to and why? And then,
390 to 393, rise in the strength of spirit to resist it, blot out the images. These are all the things he's referring to. This is why we quote those pages so often. Handle animal magnetism, which is handling the beliefs of matter, which is what this lesson is about. Okay. Someone new sent me. What is it called? TED Talk?
Oh, yeah.
TED Talk. Well, I mentioned before, there's someone, her name is Anita Morjani, who wrote a book called...
Dying to Be Me.
Yes, thank you. Dying to Be Me. In which she says of the experience, and I've spoken about it before, how she struggled with cancer for 4 years, very aggressive. She passed on in the hospital. And then she came back to live to tell about it and what she learned. She learned a lot. She's not a Christian Scientist, but her points she makes are Christian Science. I know, and I didn't read the whole book. Some of it is very medical, but parts that I read. One definite thing, and it sounded just like Mrs. Eddy, was she found out that the cancer had not killed her. Her false beliefs had killed her. Her fear, her negativity had killed her. And when she got to the other side and she met her father and others, I guess, they pretty much said, well, her time wasn't over. She needed to go back. And that now that she learned this, because at first she thought, well, why would I want to go back to all that pain and sorrow? But she learned that this cancer wasn't true or real. So she did. She said, okay, well, she came back, and she found that to be true. In the next few weeks, the cancer just shriveled up to nothing.
In 5 weeks, she was discharged from the hospital, perfectly healthy.
Perfectly healthy.
But when she met her father, who had passed on many years before, he told her that her time was not right, her time had not come, that she needed to go back and help others and to live her life fearlessly.
Cowardice never conquers. And you see, once she learned the unreality of matter and its claims, which she did, she could come back and do it. And she said she described it as if you were in a great big warehouse and you just had one little
flashlight.
Yeah. So you could only see wherever the flashlight put itself. But she said, if a great big light came in and flooded the warehouse, then you see all these amazing, incredible things that you couldn't see before. And they're all there. They all exist. I believe it to be the New Jerusalem. And it exists not in matter, but in spirit. So she comes back, and in this little talk that she gives, she talks about 5 very important points that she learned. And the first one was...
Guess what?
Love.
The only thing that matters.
Only thing. All other things, no, they don't really matter. Love. And then she made...
And not just loving others.
Yeah.
But learn to love yourself. She didn't say, as God's image and likeness, but...
That's what she meant.
Love. Yeah. It says the more you can learn to love yourself correctly, the more love you have for others.
It's impossible. How can you love someone else if you don't love yourself? You can't. You have nothing to give in that respect. You have to love yourself, but you have to see yourself as God's image. You have to know how much God loves you. And then she said something very interesting. Well, a lot of people with these so-called diseases, fatal, malignant, whatever you want to call them, malignant, well, She says that they don't love themselves. But she also said, and so they allow people to boss and bully them. That's a very toxic relationship when you're in that. And if you allow it, it shows you don't think highly of yourself. As God's child, if you know you're God's child, you are not going to let someone boss and bully you. You're not going to let mortal mind boss and bully you. Therefore, you're not going to let some person, because it's neither person, place, or thing. You understand it to be animal magnetism. And you're not going to be passive and let the wrong rule the right. You're going to rise up and say no. And you don't boss and bully, and you don't let anyone boss and bully you. There comes, you know, you must be true to yourself. And there comes a point where that you just, no, sorry, this isn't happening. It's not going to be in my experience. And you do whatever you need to. These are things Mrs. Evans taught us, and she also taught us much about toxic relationships where you're in a situation like that, an unhappy situation, and if you let it go on and on and on, eventually you pick some convenient disease and say, see you around, goodbye, I'm gone, I'm out of here. Why not face up to it, as one of my very favorite, cowardice never conquers. So that was number one. And then number two, after love, was what her father told her, live your life fearlessly.
Never fear anything.
That is so important, I feel, because to live fearful is just useless.
It is.
And what does Mrs. Eddy say about fear, fearing?
Dishonors God.
I fear nothing except to fear to disobey God.
Yeah.
Every other fear is unhealthy.
Be careful for nothing.
Yeah, be careful for nothing. That means don't fear anything. But in everything, give thanks.
A holy fear, right?
A holy fear to disobey God, yes. Or, as I guess was that Janet, if you fear it is disowning God, because, again, we've talked about it, you're being a power other than God. So that all goes together.
If anything we fear, then that it's not real anyway. If you're fearing something, it's not real. We didn't know. That's why we kept fearing.
This woman feared cancer. She found out she didn't have to. It wasn't real. Now, you can go to the other side and find this out, but better to find it out now. You're going to have to learn the lesson here or hereafter. We are taught in this church, so why not here? And again, this is proving the unreality of error. And she admitted it wasn't that killed her. All that killed her was her fears, her negativities, her being bossed around, perhaps. Maybe at work, I don't know. She seemed to have a happy relationship with her husband, but somebody was bullying her. She had no feeling she wouldn't stand up to it. She let it go on.
Sometimes it's just that wrong voice you listen to.
That's it. That's the biggest bully of all. It's a bully. That's why it's called aggressive mental suggestion. It's aggressive. And then she brings out, so what are you going to do? Are you going to fear or are you going to love? And, you know, I can see in my past times when everything I did mainly was motivated on fear. Afraid someone was going to like me. Afraid, something bad would happen. Or I don't know. Everything was fear. It's a horrible way to live. And I was a very annoying to be with. Instead, everything should be based on love, whatever you do. It's because you love, not because you're afraid, but because you love. She thought, think of the world if everyone loves each other. What a wonderful world that would be.
Even fear of punishment.
Yeah.
That he says, fear of punishment never made a moral man.
And this is this fierce God that's up in the heavens that's going to punish you. That's not the Christian Science God. It took me a while to understand this because I was indoctrinated in old theology. But God loves you. You could be the worst sinner in the world. You could, it doesn't matter. He still loves you. You don't have to try to please him. The love just pours out. That's just love. It's like the sunshine, God love. And once you understand that truly, if it gets into your being at all, then suddenly you're not going to want to disobey this God. You're going to want to know this God. You're going to want to serve this God. You're going to want to love this God. And all this other stuff drops off. That's how it works. We love him because what?
We love him.
Yes. Now the third is an interesting one. You remember it? The third.
Joy.
Yes.
Laughter.
Joy and laughter. How often do you laugh? How often do you see the humor to a situation? Or do you go, oh my gosh, terrible, instead of, wow, that was ridiculous. Joy and laughter should be part of life. That is, what is our first watching point?
Your joy.
Keep your joy. So even if you're going through a difficult time, do not lose your joy. Gratitude, we're taught here, joy and gratitude, two essential ingredients to any healing. And I can't think of his name. Was it something Cousins? He was...
Norman Cousins.
He was some kind of a doctor or something, but he recommended if you were not feeling well, you sit and watch funny movies. Just laugh and laugh. I've done that. It's so sad to me sometimes if we'll sit and watch a funny movie, and most people are laughing, but occasionally I'll just see someone sitting very seriously, not even smiling. They're missing out on a wonderful expression of God.
You're probably far away thinking about their troubles.
Probably. See the humor in life. It's so wonderful to be with people who love to laugh. Not maliciously or not in a silly or giddy way, but in a joyous, happy way.
Because what does it show when someone can laugh, even laugh at themselves?
No, especially laugh at them.
It shows they have gratitude for what God does for them. It shows a gratitude, and it shows a rising up of somewhat above this human existence and the absurdity of the human existence.
Yeah, you're laughing at the mortal mind. Isn't mortal mind, I mean, when you think about it, better to laugh than cry at it. And it does not like to be laughed at, because that means you're not taking it seriously. And it wants you to, oh, this is terrible, this is horrible, and I'm mean and horrible, and you obey me. But if you go, ha, 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 I don't believe you, it scatters it.
Error hates that more than anything else. And you can
found it out.
Found it out. The big fake. And it's in somewhere Mrs. Eddy talks about God's people are joyous. They laugh. You can
enduring
tell God.
Enduring wit and vivacity.
Thank you. Enduring wit and vivacity. They're happy people. They're not morose. It's a wonderful way to live with joy and with great gratitude. And then the fourth. To be grateful for life, the gift. That goes back to what Mrs. Eddy says in her chapter on prayer, which what does she say about it? Gratitude.
Be grateful for life, truth, and love.
Yes. Be grateful for life, truth, and love. Are you grateful for your life? I mean, she was talking about how, well, how could she, you know, this 4 years, horrible years, she was going through this cancer and treatment and all medical stuff was going on. Nothing could help her. How do you be grateful for that? And she said, well, if you're going through a tough time, she said, you haven't come to the end yet. There'll be an end. And don't we know that to be true? What does Mrs. Eddy say? Truth persists, error does not. There's always an end to error. It'll come to an end. I don't care how hard it seems, how long it's gone on, it'll end. And from that experience, if you take it correctly, you will learn lessons, unbelievable lessons. Look what she's learned.
Like the chick pecking out of its shell.
Thank you. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. They come to teach you a lesson. There's something not quite right with your perspective on life, your understanding of God. It's come for your benefit. And if you see it that way, it'll lift you up past the stars. When I think of where I once was and where I am now, and if I hadn't have had the rough experiences that got me here, I would just be that little passive, timid, miserable girl. Let these experiences teach you the lessons God wants you to learn, and don't fear them. And through science or suffering, and it's good to get to the point where you're avoiding the problem, but if you're not there yet, or if you've got some, and believe me, I think while we're on this earth, we're all going to have some, then say, Father, what is there? What more can I learn about your goodness, your love? I'm your willing disciple.
She learned that the cancer was not her enemy. In fact, the cancer was her friend because it helped her get to a better place, to a better understanding of what life was all about. Didn't Paul write something, delight in infirmities or something like that?
Yes.
This is why. And once she learned that lesson, what happened to the cancer?
Nowhere.
Gone. And the doctor said, no explanation. No, this, how could this be? And they have all this medical proof that she had it and she should have been dead. And she was gone long enough that she shouldn't have come back either. I think they said 7 hours.
I understand the same story where they kept probing after she came back. They kept probing and looking. She finally said, stop.
Yep.
5 weeks. Probing
him. Yeah, they were determined to find something, and that's how the peering out. Mrs. Eddy talks about lines in hell where you're peering, peering into the, you know, matter and everything, peering into it. So,
and what is Mrs. Eddy saying about these experiences? When they cease to bless, they will cease to occur. So get the blessing.
Get the blessing and rejoice even in infirmities. That was Paul. You rejoice because there's something tremendous to learn if you embrace it and learn it. Now, if you run away from it and don't, then they'll seem to go on and on and on until you're ready to get it. And then the last, number 5, be yourself. And we say, as God made you.
Embrace your uniqueness.
Yeah.
Because God has given you a place that nobody else can fill. So love that place that God has given you. Love who and what you are. Don't try to be somebody else by envy and jealousy. Are not allowed.
Who shall be greatest? It's so wonderful to be yourself as God made you. So freeing. You're miserable until you do that. Go ahead, who's trying to speak?
I was just going to say, in last week we talked about coveting and competing, and this fits right in there. When you're yourself, you're not trying to compete for somebody else's place.
That's right.
Then you can be happy for other people.
And you can be happy for other people. And even if right now you think you have a hard row to hoe, as I say, just about all the things that we've talked about. I mean, look what happened to her. She had a hard row to hoe. And look what she turned it into. What do they say? When life gives you a lemon, you make
lemonade.
Lemonade. Look what Luann has done. Her life. She turned it into lemonade. Jeremy's turned his life into lemonade. And when you're going through it and you're having to deal with the lemon, it seems like, oh, man.
And my favorite, one of my favorites before I found this church, Bible verses was, and it came to pass. It did, and I added, and it didn't come to stay around.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
Come to pass, and it's all over the Bible. I once heard a sermon on that. I loved it. That was a good thought. Hasn't come to stay, it's come to pass. And how long it stays is up to you. To some degree, it is. Lessons have to be learned. And if you refuse, what does Mrs. Eddy call it? The obduracy of the era. How many times you got to get thrown into the ocean and get tossed around? So she proved without a doubt, this woman, Anita, the unreality of matter and its laws. This lesson is full of it in the Bible. We talked about it yesterday in our Bible study. We had the loaves and the fishes, the walking on the water, and then also, which we didn't talk about, but the axe being thrown.
Axe head floating.
All these examples. And if it was done once, that means it can be done again. Proof
of a principle that always applies, because impossibilities don't occur. It occurs. Exactly. Now, that doesn't mean we all have to go and walk on the water. I mean, that would be silly to interpret it that way. But it's an example of the infinite ability that we have when we obey God and are willing to do His will. Go and get rid of all these false beliefs that are chains around us. And it's work. Nobody said it's easy. But it's the most satisfying thing we can do, because it is life itself.
And this is what brings heaven on earth, and why you can experience what people seem to have experienced, what we call beyond, or when you pass on, you can experience it now. It's what the New Jerusalem is about. And the more you spiritualize your thought, and the less you give creed and heedance to matter and matter's laws, the more this will develop in you, the more you will understand it. You have to live it before you can understand it. And it's this gradual ascension, progression. It's wonderful. Okay, well, we will end today with miscellaneous writings, questions, and answers. The question, is it correct to say of material objects that they are nothing and exist only in imagination?
Mrs. Eddy's answer, nothing and something are words which need correct definition. They either mean formations of indefinite and vague human opinions, or scientific classifications of the unreal and the real. My sense of the beauty of the universe is that beauty typifies holiness and is something to be desired. Earth is more spiritually beautiful to my gaze now than when it was more earthly to the eyes of Eve. The pleasant sensations of human belief, of form and color, must be spiritualized until we gain the glorified sense of substance, as in the new heaven and earth, the harmony of body and mind. Even the human conceptions of beauty, grandeur, and utility is something that defies a sneer. It is more than imagination. It is next to divine beauty and the grandeur of spirit. It lives with our earth life and is the subjective state of high thoughts. The atmosphere of mortal mind constitutes our mortal environment. What mortals hear, see, feel, taste, smell, constitutes their present earth and heaven. But we must grow out of even this pleasing thraldom and find wings to reach the glory of supersensible life. Then we shall soar above as the bird in the clear ether of the blue temporal sky. To take all earth's beauty into one gulp of vacuity and label beauty nothing is ignorantly to caricature God's creation, which is unjust to human sense and to the divine realism. In our immature sense of spiritual things, let us say of the beauties of the sensuous universe, I love your promise, and shall know sometime the spiritual reality and substance of form, light, and color, of what I now through you discern dimly. And knowing this, I shall be satisfied. Matter is a frail conception of mortal mind, and mortal mind is a poorer representative of the beauty, grandeur, and glory of the immortal mind.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.